podcasting. The PSAs you hear on Miller and Condon and iHeartMedia Des Moines are presented in part by Nick Mick. We take care of our own. Now, here's Miller and Condon.
Ken Miller. Trent Condon. Miller and Condon on 1460 KXNO. And now on 106.3 FM.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome in. It's Miller and Condon on a Tuesday. Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO and 106.3 FM. Trent Condon, Ken Miller with you for the next couple of hours, talking sports with you. Thanks for carving out some of your morning and spending it here with Trent and myself. On the BMW of Des Moines guest list here today, a busy program. Got a lot of ground to cover, a lot of different directions. We're going to head south, first of all, to Kansas City, the Kansas City area. Blair Kirkhoff from the Kansas City Star, longtime columnist, will join us. We'll planning anyways on covering a lot of ground with Blair, the Chiefs, the Big 12, ... with Blair Kirkhoff. I'm going to get some Royals in there. Boy, those Royals, those pesky Kansas City Royals. They're going to they're a major spoiler in this Central Division. Am I crazy to think that?
Well, I'm rooting for them here on out.
Oh,
I'm
sure.
I'm Cleveland. A big Royals fan.
Yeah.
That's basically it, because the Tigers are still hanging around a little bit, especially if the Twins continue in their 15-game losing
streak. Are the Twins hanging around, or... Oh, we'll get to that in a second.
2.8 losses, remember, with the season. Every winner losses were 2.8. You have a 6-game losing streak? That is very
impactful. That's
15-plus. Yeah.
You might my Canadian math, Trent.
That is... Not real good. Not real good. No. We'll get into it, though, and I have some thoughts.
Yeah, you should, because that was an eventful baseball game for a lot of reasons.
Wear my Expos hat, not my Twins hat today.
Yeah, I see that. That's a great hat, by the way. What a great logo. What a great
logo. Bring them back.
I hope they do. Maybe not to Olympic Stadium. I got there. I got there. I was glad I did. Olympic Stadium. Cold beer. Beer foie. The vendors had to use both languages.
Are you fluent in French?
Oh, God, no.
Did you guys take French in school?
No, I did not. I should say that.
Okay.
Yes, we did. I wasn't really into it. Yeah, so when people ask me, and can you speak French? I always, un petit peu, which means a little bit. And that's the only thing originally that I learned. Anyways, a long time ago. But Expos, great hat, great city. It is a great city.
Is it?
Montreal is a wonderful city. Now, there's one even more that I want to get to. It's on my bucket list, and that's Quebec City.
Mm-hmm.
It's like going to Europe. I'm told it's like going to Europe, but not having to leave, you know, the area.
North America.
Right, if you want. North America, better put. But Quebec is very nice. Montreal,
are they
going to
get an NHL team back? Quebec City.
They should.
Yeah. The Nordiques.
Les Nordiques. Yeah. They should. But of course, they're in Colorado right now.
Yeah.
Colorado had a nice win last night. Anyways, we are going to talk to Blair Kirkhoff. A sports wagering in Iowa is a year old, a year and 2 weeks, a couple of weeks getting to this, but we're going to recap the first year of sports wagering with our friend Brian Arilko from the Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission. I'm assuming, Trent, that all those projections, both for what the properties thought that they were going to generate and what the state perhaps thought that they were going to generate in tax form on those bets. It was all thrown out, right?
Once
we got to March and sports shut down. So we're going to talk to Brian Arilko. In the 11 o'clock hour, I'm going to talk some White Sox. How about that? A little Chicago White Sox.
First place White Sox.
They indeed are the first place White Sox. Boy, that one last night. How good is this Robert Kidd going to be, right?
It's ridiculous.
Oh, my God. He was terrific. He hit the game winner, walk-off on Sunday. And yesterday he's a major pain in the butt. But James Fagan from The Athletic, we had him prior to the season. We're going to have him back to talk about the first place White Sox. And then our friend Zuba Mahente from ESPN will join us. So we only probably need to break a little bit early, because I want to spend a significant amount of time with Blair. If you can keep us on track, that would be appreciated. But, I want to start. I'll get your Twins in a second, because that was a fun game last night. We got a real big game tonight. Nuggets going up against the Jazz, Niang squad, Monte Morris. Squad. And did you see where that one got moved to?
I did not.
ABC.
Really?
Yes.
I missed
Tuesday
that.
Tuesday night, and ABC has the coverage of that one.
Well, I saw the start time was a tick different. They moved it up a half hour.
Oh, what time do they? I don't even know.
It's 7:30 as opposed to, we had seen the 5 o'clock, 8:30 starts for these doubleheaders that we've had here recently. This is now going to be 4:30 for Raptor Celtics, 7:30 for Jazz Nuggets.
Want to be done in time for the local news, I'm assuming,
yes,
right?
That is exactly right. And so that's the direction they're going to go. But yeah, that's pretty cool.
ABC's got the coverage.
Not
of that
what
one.
You'd anticipate Nuggets Jazz being the big ABC game.
On a Tuesday.
It's a game seven.
Yeah, that's right.
Is it going to reverberate?
I don't know. I hope it's a hell of a game.
I do, too.
I do.
Jazz were, by far, the first four games in the series, they should have really swept the Nuggets.
Could have. I mean, you could make that case.
That game won.
Yeah.
The Nuggets were lucky to get to overtime, and then they covered in overtime, which I had the Nuggets.
Well, they pulled away by nine or something, if memory serves.
But the Jazz, I thought, outplayed them that game. Then the next three games, the Jazz dominated. And then a switch has just been flipped. And a big piece of that, of course, is Jamal Murray and the ridiculous shooting that he
has. Something.
But it's so fun just being able to flip on these games, too, and see Niang out there and see Monte Morris out there. And even they're not playing 38 minutes a game
like that. They both played 20 minutes in the last game.
They're fun to watch, and it's good to just have that local connection.
That's awesome.
It brings it in. It really does make it, I think, even that much more important here on the local front.
Of the two, I mean, I'm guessing the answer everybody's going to give is Monte Morris had the better. Did you think George Niang was going to play 20 minutes in the playoffs in the NBA?
No.
Of course not.
I figured Monte Morris, I said as much as he was preparing for the draft, I said, that's a guy that you can put in the league for the next decade, and he's your backup point guard.
Right.
You do not have to worry about that position for 10 years. You sign that dude, you can get a good second contract probably for him, and you don't have to worry about your backup point guard position because you know he's going to go in there and know how to run.
And not turn the ball over.
And that's what he does.
Yep.
He is a perfect backup point guard in the league. George Niang, come on.
I thought he was a G League player at best.
Nice offensive player.
Great story. Good guy.
Yes.
Going to be a fan favorite, even though he's going to be the guy at the end of the bench.
He'll take over for Hefty on the basketball broadcast here in a couple of years.
That was the thought,
And now
he's going to have to wait until his basketball career is over.
Which is going to take a lot longer than we anticipated.
Absolutely. I'm sure, bring that up at some point. Probably with Zubin as we go around the world of sports with Zubin. But Monte Morris and George Niang's alma mater, of course, Iowa State. News came out during our show yesterday. They're going to put 25,000 people in Jack Trice Stadium for a week from Saturday. And Trent, I mean, timing-wise, not the best of timing, right, to put that out on the same morning that the New York Times identified two cities in Iowa. Ames, number one, Iowa City, number two, per capita, with the most new infections of COVID-19. But Pollard, look, here's what I'll say. I give him credit in one respect. He's putting his you-know-whats on the line. Mm-hmm. He truly is. This could backfire in a huge way, especially, you know, on the precipice of Travis Hines' column in the Des Moines Register today. They did not reach out at all to Story County health people. They were not consulted. Not that they would have had the final say. We know that that's not the case. But maybe you should have at least shown an interest in talking to the people that do this. But they didn't. But they're going to put 25,000 people in the building. This on the heels of this morning. Ames Community School District has decided to start the year virtually as the community tries to contain one of the nation's worst COVID-19 outbreaks. All right. So we know that he's got his you-know-what on the line. They're going to have 25,000 people. There's going to be no tailgating. You can't put up tents. I don't think you can put up chairs. Can you stand by your car and have a beer before you go in? I mean, will they patrol the parking lots once you get out of your car?
That is illegal. Technically, that is illegal to do that. So
you proceed right into the stadium and you take your seat?
I would guess so.
No lingering, no socializing. I get it. No, you can't set up a grill.
Right.
You can't set up, you know, the
beanbag boards.
Nothing like that.
Nope, no bags.
At least on Iowa State property.
Private,
yeah. So, obviously different there. So, we know what he's up against, but here's where I keep coming back. This is a loyal bunch. And I've said this for years, and I've been criticized for it. It's probably not the right way to put it, but I have. They do as they're told, Cyclone fans.
Sure.
They do.
Yes, yeah.
And
buy the tickets? Okay.
Right.
We need to buy the gear? Okay.
Absolutely. They do as they're a loyal, loyal bunch. Pollard has said, and I believe it when he says this, I don't care how big the check you write the university is. If you're not wearing a mask, if you're not following these guidelines, we're going to throw you out. And we're not going to want you back. And I don't want to take your phone call that you write a check for, you've given this university blah, blah, blah over the years. It doesn't matter. They want fans in the building. I get it's money. They need the money.
They do.
Everybody does.
Yeah.
But I think if there is a school that's got a chance to pull this off, I think it's Iowa State. I really do. I believe this to the bottom of my heart. I really do that they're a loyal group and they will listen to their leader.
Well, and what he said yesterday, all we ask is that you respect others, follow our guidelines, and support the Cyclones. Very succinct,
mm-hmm.
and I think correctly put. You can argue back and forth. We can have the mass debate, but have the mass debate on your own time. You're on the Cyclones' time here.
Right.
And yeah. on the Cyclones' time, that's what you're going to do. Doesn't matter what kind of piece of paper that you have that says that you can't wear a mask, then you can't go watch the Cyclones. Mm-hmm. It's as simple as that. Follow the guidelines, and I think you knocked it out of the park there. You're absolutely right. If there is a group that's going to pull this off, and it's not going to turn divisive, and it's not going to turn angry, Iowa State University and the Cyclone fan base, it is the one to do it. We're a week and a half away.
Yeah, I know.
A week and a half away, and we're going to see 25,000 people uh-huh. at Jack Trice. And I think they're going to pull it off.
I do, too.
And I think they're going to pull it off beautifully. And when it happens, there's going to be a lot of upset people in eastern Iowa.
There is, Trent.
There's going to be a lot of upset people here.
And there's going to be a lot of people upset people in Lincoln.
Uh-huh.
And
Columbus.
We'll get to that vote in a second, right, because that was remarkable that I think it was the lawsuit that precipitated the disclosure there. But so Iowa State, good luck to you. I believe they're going to pull it off. I want to get more on the tailgating. Can you even stand mm-hmm. outside and have a beer before you go in? Or do you park the car? Do you lock the doors, get out, and go right into the stadium? And once the game's over, you're back in your car, and off you go to wherever you came from.
I think that's the way that they're at least going to try to set it up. And initially, another thing that Pollard said is, you do this right, we'll be able to mm-hmm. invite you back and maybe invite more.
Right.
Do it wrong,
it's
nobody's going to be able to come in.
Right. Kansas, no fans in week one down there for their game. So a fascinating story. We'll continue to watch it. And Pollard knows that there's a lot of national eyeballs on them. There's a lot of people that believing they're going, some hoping they'll fail. But there's a lot of folks that believe that they will fail. We shall see.
We got another question answered that we wondered about, and that is, what is the 2021 Cy-Hawk game? Where is that game going to be played? Of mm-hmm. course, scheduled to be in Iowa City this year, not going to be the case. And
right.
because of that, some people speculated, well, 2021, doesn't it just stay where it was supposed to be this year? That's not going to be the case. It'll be back in Ames. So the 2020 game officially did not happen in any form or fashion. They will go on as scheduled in Ames in 2021. With it, I do wonder, will there be an extra year tacked on to the end of that contract?
I hope so.
Yeah, and before they get a new 4 or 6 year deal, whatever uh-huh. it turns out to be, is another year going to be tacked on in Iowa City. And the second part that I'm at least pondering here a little bit, we heard that Jamie Pollard yesterday said he's had conversations with Gary Barta. And what those conversations are like, because this makes perfect sense. I know there's some Hawkeye fans upset about it and thinking we got screwed out of a home game with Iowa State, but the way the schedules are set up in the Big Ten and the Big 12, you play your 5 road games the year that you have the other team at home. Same thing with Big Ten, Big 12. Iowa and Iowa State schedules are set up in the correct fashion, so you're not going to have a year where you're playing 6 road games or just have 6 home games. So they have it set up the correct way. I do wonder about that and what that conversation's like between Pollard and Barta. Do we know what their relationship's like?
I don't. I don't really know the answer. I remember when we first got over here and do you remember Iowa was going to Jack Trice and Pollard for that game upped the tickets $100.
Yep.
And we had Pollard on that afternoon and I asked him, you know, out of the courtesy, did you let Gary Barta know what you were doing? I didn't say, and this got taken because of the a-hole I was sitting beside.
Sure.
Right? He thought it was, well, I wasn't asking, what do you mean? Do you want Pollard to ask Barta for permission? That's not what I said.
Right.
I said, did you pick up the phone and just call him? Because once that announcement was made, Barta's phone's going to ring off the hook.
Absolutely.
Amongst the tickets that their fan base mm-hmm. is going to get. And Pollard kind of chuckled. Oh, why would I do that? Of course, he was placating idiot boy.
Right, right.
But that's the only kind of interaction I know of the two of them.
And that was what?
That was a long time ago.
13 years ago?
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
So these guys have worked together.
They're competitors.
Yes, but they know each other. They know the hurdles that each and the obstacles that each of them have. I'm going to guess that at least it's a working relationship.
Absolutely.
And they're scheduling. It's not just football. They're scheduling basketball every year.
Yeah.
Remember that game for years was played on Friday nights. The college men's game was played on Friday nights. Yeah, and they moved that back a day because of finals week and the way that it's set up there. You got to figure that they came together when the announcement came down. First of all, no home and homes with Drake and UNI in men's basketball, but also the Big Four Classic, and then ultimately the Big Four Classic going away. You got to figure that that relationship's got to be pretty close.
I would think. I would
between think. The two. But just reading
as
through that yesterday.
As close as it can be.
Right. Well, while still competing. Being rivals.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Pollard's still liking to, well, be the bear or poke the bear.
Well, look, at and whatever I give him full credit for doing that. I thought that's, look, it's been great talk fodder over the years when he put up those billboards. And he made Iowa State fans, he truly did. He gave them a little shot of, not courage, but a little bounce in their step. Mm-hmm. You know what? Pick your heads up, Cyclone fans. You don't have to walk around with your heads down. Pick your heads up. Come on, let's go. And he's been good a lot of ways. Anyways, let's move on. I want to talk about your Twins in this first segment. Because that was, this is such a fun series.
To? I got so upset last night.
It's good.
It's
good.
I was sitting there. All right.
What would you have given to get upset in April?
Right. That's a great point. So the triple play, that's the first.
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching it, and I can't figure out exactly what's going on. And I was reading through, and there was some baseball descriptor kind of thing. If Arias would have thrown home and got the triple play that way, it would have been the first ever, or the first since 1892, 4-2, I think it was 4-2-6-3 double or triple play since 1892. Just absolutely ridiculous the way that played out. But then they only got one out of it, and then here come the White Sox. Yeah. And you mentioned Luis Robert.
Oh, my gosh.
Hits the homer to tie it. Gives them the lead in the late
Ground
in the game.
Just,
I didn't know that this guy was going to be. I knew he was a really good prospect.
Mm-hmm.
But to see him come in and just absolutely mash from the get-go.
And defense, too.
And what's the hole in his game?
I don't know. He can't speak English properly yet. They had to get an interpreter. I listened after the game on Sunday when he hit the walk-off, and he had to have an interpreter out there with him. So, I mean, I don't know if that's...
Well, baseball comes so easily, I'm sure.
Right.
He'll work in English, and he'll be speaking fluently by next year.
Absolutely.
Guy's a stud.
Oh, gosh, he's so good.
This White Sox team, they are loaded. And the importance of last night, from my perspective as a Twins fan, I thought was so huge because they face a lefty. We talked about this yesterday. They can't hit left-handers.
Mm-hmm.
A Fry comes in yesterday for the White Sox. They can't hit lefties, and with Keuchel going today, you're looking at another loss. You're looking at seven straight, and all of a sudden the Tigers are nipping at your heels.
The hole on the White Sox, we saw it in the second inning last night.
That was bad.
It was bad.
That defense is atrocious.
Yeah, it was not good. And the comeback is on. Look, I don't have a dog in the fight. I know it means something to you, and I'm glad that it does. This is going to be a fun rivalry because these White Sox team, their arrow is clearly pointing up, Trent Condon.
And the Twins still do have plenty of young talent.
Well, and here's the good news then. They get their pitcher back tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Pineda goes tonight.
Yep.
They're getting somebody else back.
Odorizzi
comes back.
Buxton's coming back.
That's the one. And Josh Donaldson tomorrow.
Just think of that.
Right?
Just think of the four names we just mentioned.
That's
there.
Trade deadline, Trent. That's pretty good acquisitions.
That's pretty. If this is a normal year and you're getting those four dudes at the trade deadline, we went out and did something.
Yeah.
The Twins didn't do something, but getting those four guys is going to go a long, long ways.
The White Sox are absolutely loaded. Twins, White Sox, going to be fun. Those pesky Royals, we're going to talk to Blair Kirkhoff about them. Boy, they're not going to be worth a damn, but they're going to win some big ball games, and they're going to factor into this race. KXNO and iHeart want to help you with your bills. Text the keyword bills to 200-200 right now. It's your chance to win $1,000. That's bills to 200-200.
You'll get a confirmation text and info. Standard data and message rates apply in this nationwide contest.
All right, Blair Kirkhoff coming up next. We're going to save some time for our friend Brian Arilko from the Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission. Recap year number one of sports wagering in the state of Iowa. Miller and Condon till noon, Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO.
Ken Miller, Trent Condon, Miller and Condon on 1460 KXNO.
And now on 106.3 FM.
welcome back. Continuing on in the first hour of the program, Miller and Condon taking you until noon on Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO and 106.3 FM. Always grateful when our next guest can find time for us here in Des Moines. He's Blair Kirchhoff from the Kansas City Star, kansascity.com. He joins us. We're going to talk, cover a lot of ground here with Blair. Blair, Trent, and Ken, thanks for coming on as always. How you been, Blair Kirchhoff?
Been great. Hope you guys are doing all right.
Yeah, doing fine. Looking forward to the start of college football, at least in Ames. Iowa City can't say the same thing, which is crazy, but we'll get to that in a second. You know where I want to start with you, and it's those pesky Kansas City Royals, who are going to play a significant role in whoever comes out on top in the Central and how many teams eventually find their way into the playoffs from the Central Division. Blair, I know this is going to be a year where there's no playoffs for them, and their record says that they're losing more than they're winning. But boy, oh boy, this team has got a propensity, seemingly, to win big games. And there's some encouraging signs for fans of this team when you look at that roster.
There is. That's you're right about that. Last night was a great example. They were trailing the Indians 1-0 in the eighth and found a way to scratch out two runs and beat Cleveland 2-1. And I'm not saying that's not the type of – they wouldn't win that type of game before, but, they stood toe-to-toe with, with I think the best pitcher in baseball in Beaver, and the Royals matched Brad Keller against him, and Keller's been terrific for the Royals, and he left the game down 1-0 in the seventh. So they hung in there, and then got into the Indians' bullpen and were able to scratch out a win. And, look, there are a lot of flaws with this Royals team and some really odd stats, too. I mean, they've lost, I think this is right, they've lost rubber games of series, right? So games that are one apiece going into the third game. They've lost 31 of the last 34 of those dating back to the last 2 years. It's unbelievable, remarkable. But last night, they had lost their last, I can't remember if it was 15 or 16, that was more than that, a lot longer than that, streak of not winning when trailing going into the seventh inning, and they broke that last night. So there are some nice pieces here. There really are. And this team has a feel, it just seems to me a sense that this is where the Royals were a year or two before their pennant seasons in 14 and 15. You saw some good things. You knew it wasn't a playoff team then, but if you can imagine, some ideas, and if they can make some good deals, then maybe this is a team that can compete, not next year, but I think in 2020.
From there, Blair, let's jump into Big 12 football. We saw the kickoff of football at the college level with an FCS game over the weekend. Just over a week away when the Big 12 gets started with their non-conference, the single one that they have this season. What's the conversation in Kansas City right now? And, we're hearing about the outbreak in Ames and Iowa City here in our state. What are you hearing in Lawrence and Manhattan as they prepare for the season?
Yeah, well, there's issues there as well in terms of COVID outbreaks in Columbia, Missouri as well, with Missouri and the SEC, and they're starting 2 weeks later. But, look, there are outbreaks everywhere that colleges reopened, right? I mean, that was the nature, right? It wasn't unexpected, and now the college towns are dealing with all of that. And we kind of saw this in a miniature version in June when athletes started returning back to campus for summer workouts. Schools like Kansas State and Texas and Clemson and LSU, to name a few, had spike in COVID cases and had to either shut down or reduce their practice time. Then we're seeing the same thing, only a little bit larger because it's all students. And so Kansas responded by saying late last week that no fans are going to be allowed in their, in their home football games. Now you can insert a joke here if you want, but no fans will be allowed at least for the first few KU home football, at least for the first one. And they haven't made a decision beyond that. And so schools have acted accordingly. And I'm just glad. I really am glad that the Big 12 is trying to play football and other fall sports this year. The Big Ten, the decision of the Big Ten and the Pac-12, I respect that. I don't think it was necessarily the right one, but I'm glad that the Big 12 and the SEC and the ACC are giving it a go, and we'll see if it works. My guess is there are going to be some complications just like with baseball, if you're not playing in a bubble, then you're going to have complications. And we've seen, you know, we've seen that throughout baseball, and I think we'll see it in college football as well.
You know, Blair, one of the reasons I love having you on is we get to ask you a Missouri question. We don't have a lot of people that, you know, are up to the Missouri. But where I want to go with you is, when the SEC came out with their schedule and the crossover games that were put on the Tigers played, including crossovers with Alabama and LSU, and I know LSU's roster, they've lost most of their starters from last year, but we're talking about LSU here, who doesn't rebuild, they reload. But boy, oh boy, Blair, who did they get under their skin at the schedule maker to put those two teams in weeks one and week three? Yikes.
Yeah, they got the short end of the stick. There's no doubt about it. And look, Eli Drinkwitz, the new coach, you know, first year coach, and he was at Appalachian State a year ago and did a really, really good job there. Said all the right things publicly, but you know, privately he was just seething at that. It's just a sign of, look, you're Missouri, you're not a, you know, you're not a brand name in this conference. You're a first year, you know, head coach in this league. Here's what we're going to do to you. We're going to stick it to you. And that's what happened. At least that's my interpretation of what happened. And but in fairness to Missouri and Drinkwitz, I think just about everybody in college football, when it comes to coaching hot seats, is going to get something of a pass this year.
Yeah, I agree.
It is such an unusual set of circumstances, and so it's hard to evaluate this season objectively like we do in other years. So if you know, Missouri flounders with outcomes that we expect against LSU and Alabama, and that spirals the season, I don't think anybody's really going to hold that against Eli Drinkwitz, and he'll get a second first year in 2021.
Oklahoma obviously deserves the benefit of the doubt coming into any season when we look at the Big 12. Who do you like second? Are you buying the Texas hype? Are you somebody that is jumping on the Iowa State bandwagon? Is it Oklahoma State? Who's that second team for you?
You know, I did one of the preseason magazines, and just on reflex, you always have Oklahoma first, and then it's always a decision who to match them up with in the Big 12 championship game. And I went ahead and listed Texas out of reflex, but upon further inspection, when I think about it more, I kind of like Oklahoma State better as the main challenger to OU. I just, with all they have coming back on both sides of the ball, not just on offense, but on both sides of the ball, I think that they've got more coming back than Texas does. And if you add up the number of like NFL prospects, Oklahoma State's right there with anybody in the league. So, but I do like, I like Iowa State in the top three or four. I think I had them fourth, but if you're, you know, if you're in the top four in the Big 12, at least, you know, you're at least thought of. If that's the perception, then I think that there is absolutely every reason to believe that, you know, you can be in the Big 12 championship game. You can get one of those top two spots and get to Arlington. So I think something else I like about Iowa State this year is the sour taste in their mouths. You know, I think they for the first time, you know, last season under Matt Campbell, I think they felt like they underachieved a bit, and so I think they've got that extra motivation and which will help them get through this season. Although it just is hard to talk about this season as anything like we've known, right? You know, what happens when a position group gets infected with the coronavirus? Mm-hmm. There's just so many variables that can happen this year. But, you know, if we're talking about under semi-normal circumstances, I do like the Cyclones from a motivational standpoint in terms of getting the job done because of what happened to them last year.
Your thoughts on K-State? Of course, their signature win last year was picking off Oklahoma. They returned their quarterback, but they lose a lot of beef up front. Is that the concern when it comes to Klieman's crew in year number two for him?
It is. The offensive line is one place where you look at and wonder how they're going to get it done. But I'm to the point with Chris Klieman, even after just 1 year, of thinking he is a long-term, seven to eight victory a season sort of coach, always, five and four or better in the Big 12, just that kind of guy. and his staff. I'm high on him, and I think it's such a winning fit for Kansas State to have him as the coach there. That doesn't mean they're going to win seven or eight, nine every year. They'll have Bill Snyder didn't do that, but I just think you can count on him. He's going to recruit to what it takes to win in Manhattan, and he'll coach him up on game days in a way that you mentioned the game Ken against Oklahoma last year. That was just a perfect example. Mm-hmm. If you look at the score, that ended up, I think it ended up being a one score game, but Kansas State dominated that game, had a wonderful game plan, and handed Oklahoma its only loss until the postseason. So, I'm really high on him. I think Kansas State's in great. There was a terrific hire, and I think that program's in great shape for the long haul.
Couple of extensions in the works. Andy Reid, 62 years old, looking at a six-year deal, but probably the bigger of the two, Brett Veach. The way that he has built this football team, culminating with the Super Bowl last year, a young guy that has a lot of general managing in front of him, certainly. I don't know if Andy Reid will complete those 6 years, but getting Brett Veach locked up, I think that might have been the biggest one for me.
Yeah, no, that was... look, we all knew that both of them were going to be around. Nobody, where are you going to go from winning a Super Bowl winning team with a quarterback now locked up for the next dozen years? You're not going anywhere. This just makes it official that Andy Reid and Brett Veach will be around for the first. I think it's 2025 when everything kicks in. So it makes a lot of sense. And I think Brett Veach has had a remarkable offseason. Once they signed Patrick Mahomes to what was announced as the richest contract in North American sports history, a lot of us wondered if they would find a way to get Chris Jones signed and would they find the money. But the Mahomes contract was structured so that they did have money for Chris Jones, and they've also taken care of Sammy Watkins and Travis Kelce and others. Everybody seems to be happy. Contract-wise, there's no disgruntlement in the locker room, and that's an amazing thing coming off of a Super Bowl victory. So, no, they're in really, really good shape. With if they don't win, it's not because they didn't go out and sign the right guy or extend the right guy. It's just it will be a failure on another level.
I got two more for you. One of them, John Thompson, I'm going to get to in a second, Blair, because I'm assuming your careers cross paths at some point. But just on the Chiefs, and expectations should be to repeat. I mean, they've got that much talent returning. They've had a couple of open practices over the last couple of weekends with limited fans in the stands. But when you look at this team, what would concern you? What's the, I don't know if a flaw is the right word, but what's the concern about this year's Chief? It's very tough to duplicate, or to come back and repeat a Super Bowl title. What's the biggest hurdle?
Yeah, it hasn't been done since the 03-04 Patriots. So, and that includes a lot of good Patriots teams that didn't got to the Super Bowl but didn't win it. But I don't know if there's one area that you say could dog them throughout the season, but one area that may be a concern early in the year is in the secondary. A starter, Bashaud Breeland, is out with a suspension, and starting cornerback, they lost Kendall Fuller to free agency. So two Super Bowl starters in the secondary, two corners, are gone. So the Chiefs are going to have to make do early in the year with a little bit of a makeshift at that position, and they face Deshaun Watson and the Texans in the opener, and Lamar Jackson and the Ravens are coming up soon, and they're the toughest part of their schedule may be the first four or five games. So I'll tell you what, if the Chiefs get off to a good start, then that'll be a quite a compliment to Steve Spagnuolo, the defensive coordinator, and getting this defense in good shape early, because again, the schedule's challenging early, and that defensive backfield is going to need to. They're going to have to make a little magic happen that might not be expected.
Ravens in week three, all eyes are on that one already. And last thing for you, Blair, we appreciate being so gracious with your time as you always are. John Thompson, college basketball, lost a legend over the weekend. I'm assuming that you've got a John Thompson story. You cross paths with him at some point.
Yeah, a couple of times. I was when he was at the height of his coaching career, which was the early to mid 80s at Georgetown, I was working in Virginia, in Roanoke, Virginia. So not near DC, 4 hours away. But in 1988, he was the coach of the Olympic team, and Virginia Tech had a player that made the Olympic squad that year as a guard named Bimbo Coles. So I went up to to the practice facility at Georgetown to do a story on this. And you know, all I knew of John Thompson was he's this towering, hulking, intimidating figure and presence. And I had never dealt with him or met him. And you know, I was just a sports writer in my 20s, having to ask him about just a puff story about a player. But I was still pretty intimidated by the idea. So I get up to the practice facility, and the officials make me wait like an extra hour to talk to him, and I think this is going to be a disaster. So he called, so finally they arrange it so I can go into his office and talk to him. He could not have been more gracious. He could not have been a nicer person. And we were done in 20 minutes, and he apologized for being late and told me if I ever needed anything. He gave me his telephone number, and I just thought, wow, what a contrast to what you hear and see about, Hoya paranoia and all the Georgetown things. And the other thing about John Thompson was, when the College Basketball Hall of Fame was in the planning stages, which exists in Kansas City next to the now T-Mobile Center, no longer the Sprint Center, John Thompson was, he had retired from coaching, but he was part of the National Association of Basketball Coaches Foundation, which really founded the Hall of Fame. And so I was actually in a meeting with him and Mike Krzyzewski and a couple of other coaches who the NABC really needed to have them get on board to support publicly and endorse the idea of a College Basketball Hall of Fame. And he was really, really supportive about it. And he knew he had guys that he had coached that would never be in the Naismith Hall of Fame in Springfield, but had great enough college careers that this would be a place for guys like him, for players like that he coached, and it has been. So, as usual, the public perception of somebody just vastly different than what you may have personally experienced.
Blair Kirkhoff, Kansas City Star. Blair, thank you. Appreciate it as always. We'll talk to you in a few weeks. We appreciate what you do for us, Blair. Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
You too, guys. Great talking to you.
Good to talk to you. Blair Kirkhoff, Kansas City Star. Take a time out. Come finish the hour. Sports wagering in Iowa's, it's just a little more than a year old. We'll recap, not every day of it, but some of the
I have some stories.
You do? I'm anxious. Well, I've heard most of them, actually. So is the audience. But they're good. Brian Arilko from the Iowa Racing Gaming Commission joins us next. Miller and Condon till noon, Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO.
Want to have Rush on your side.
Ken Miller, Trent Condon, Miller and Condon on 1460 KXNO.
And now on 106.3 FM.
All right, welcome back. Again, our thanks to Blair Kirkhoff from the Kansas City Star. As promised, we're going to take a look back at the first year of sports wagering in Iowa. Became legal middle of the month of August, so we're a couple of weeks late in doing so. But Brian Arilko from the Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission joins us to give his thoughts on the first year of sports wagering in Iowa. Brian, Trent, and Ken, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it as always, Brian Arilko. How have you been?
I've been doing really well, guys, and it's always a pleasure to be here, so thanks for having me.
No, I appreciate you coming on, Brian. So the sports wagering is a little more than a year old, celebrated its first birthday in the month of August, but, I guess when you would look at the projections that most of the properties put out there as to what this was going to do for their business, what it was going to do on a statewide basis, all of those projections were thrown out the window when the world changed in the middle of March, just prior to March Madness. So is it difficult to, to really grasp what went right, what went wrong, and are we on the right path considering the circumstances that 2020 brought?
Yeah, no, you make a really good point, Ken. And I think going into this, I think most of the operators were very excited about the the prospects of sports, and not just the revenue that could be directly attributed to sports wagering, but just the possibility of introducing some new customers into their business. And so things really started off quite well. The facilities that were able to launch in August or September of 2019 were very pleased with the results. Sports numbers were good. Casino numbers were good. We saw some really good numbers in November, December, January. It seemed like the market was really kind of hitting its stride. And then obviously, I know we've talked about this at length, but then when the pandemic hit, things really got turned upside down. And so many of the projections that were out there, I don't think anyone expected to meet those, and we'll be experiencing many things for the first time again this year as we go through football, and then hopefully we have a basketball season and get to experience March Madness within our sports books in Iowa, and we'll do that all with the in-person registration requirement going away.
Huge.
And so 2021 will definitely be another year that we'll have to we'll see a lot of new things and will be exciting for this segment of the casino business.
You know, another interesting part of that is it's not just going to be as simple as the books that we know that are open, you know, the DraftKings up in Jefferson and on and on and on. It's going to be different companies that aren't currently here making their way to the state. Do you have a number of the number of different operators that are looking to get in here into our state starting January 1st?
Yeah, Trent, that is exactly right. We have already experienced a high volume of calls and applications being submitted. It seems almost like last year all over again as people are gearing up for the in-person registration to go away. And so we've had a couple of companies that where their agreements or their partnerships have been approved by the commission, TSG, Russ Street. There are a number of other companies that are more driven locally or at least by their corporate casinos. For example, Penn Gaming will have their company coming in. I know the majority of our facilities have expressed an interest on carrying a second or even third skin. And so, you know, I don't think they're all going to hit in January, but I do think January, February, March of 2021, you know, it really is going to be a good time to be a customer in the state of Iowa because these books will be competing for your dollars.
No doubt. Brian, that's absolutely huge. Brian Arilko, Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission. I'd forgot about the skin aspect. So, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but every one of these sports wagering companies, they have to be associated with one of Iowa's, 19 or 20 casinos. But, and most of them have partnered up with somebody, but they've got an extra skin. So theoretically, that number could double. Or if they've got, you know, three skins, that number could actually triple, Brian.
Yeah, that's right. So Iowa law permits every casino to have two individually branded websites or skins, as most people in the industry call it. They can also request to have a third skin. Wow. With the approval of the commission. And so I think what we will see is the majority of the casinos will have two skins. Now, it's some of those companies, the corporations that own multiple casinos in Iowa, I don't think they will go from two to six right away, if they own three. But I do think now they're going to start expanding their options for their customers, and I think that's really going to be the story in 2021.
Interesting. Brian Arilko joins us from the Iowa Racing Gaming Commission. Brian, online wagering exploded in the state of Iowa, and I think it was on its way to doing that prior to the pandemic and, you know, forcing everybody to remote wagering from their mobile device. Did we underestimate how much Iowa customers would want to bet online. I know when Prairie Meadows opened, we were all out there on, and they took a lot of criticism. Boy, they didn't spend a lot of money refurbishing the book. They put a couple of chairs and a couple of folding tables, and they called it good. But Brian, that's the way that the business is trending, right? You don't have to make the shiniest book because people are betting in the comforts of their living room or, you know, wherever they want. They're not going to these casinos for the most part. Did we underestimate how big online was going to be?
I do think that many of the operators underestimated the percentage of revenue that was going to be wagered online. And so I think when we were researching this coming into last year, we saw numbers out of New Jersey, and I think most people felt like our numbers in Iowa would be at least that or greater as it relates to a percentage of the individuals that are betting online as opposed to retail. And I think people thought that because we saw New Jersey's numbers were, every year there was a higher percentage of individuals that were betting online. And so I think it was just reasonable to assume that that was what the industry was heading towards anyway. But numbers in Iowa, if you just look at the overall yearly numbers, it was really only 60%. But that is misleading because a number of those, a number of the companies or the casinos in Iowa did not offer online wagering, and still, for example, that Council Bluffs market does not have an online provider. And so as a state, we're 60% online, but if you look at casinos and just kind of take a surgical approach and look at casinos like Jefferson or Prairie Meadows, I mean, they are in 90% of the bets are being done online. And so I think that's where we're trending, and you're absolutely right. I think most people thought those numbers would be high, but I don't think anyone expected that much.
Sports have opened up again, and people are betting again, myself included. But there's no Big Ten football, and specifically no Iowa Hawkeye football this fall. Do you think that's going to impact in a small way, a big way, the bottom line, and maybe not even operators here, but you look to the east side of the state? How significant is Iowa not playing this fall going to be in your mind?
It depends. I think one thing we do not have is really a specific amount or data as to how much money was bet on college football last year. What I have heard from most of the casinos is that obviously Iowa and Iowa State football is important for their books, but NFL football is something that they really need to have. And so I think there will definitely be some impact, but if the books can offer NFL wagering, I think that will help considerably.
Brian Errilko from the Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission giving us a kind of a recap of year number one and sharing some information. I knew it was going to expand, Brian. I didn't realize the skins. That changes things. You're right. This is going to be, customers are going to be able to shop around for the absolute best line, which is a win for the sports bettor. Brian, thank you. Appreciate what you do for us. You're always there when we reach out, and we appreciate that relationship. Thank you, Brian Errilko. Appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks, guys.
Good to talk to you. Brian Errilko from the Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission. All right, Trent, hour number one is in the books. Whether you want to do this or not, we're going to talk White Sox.
I said this at the top of the show, just watching the lead dissipate, the triple play that wasn't a triple play.
That was crazy.
My blood was boiling last night. And it kind of felt good afterwards.
Sure, you're into it.
After the blood pressure went down a little bit. Because I'm just sitting and just... You clench up your fists and swearing at the TV. Sports are back.
Yes.
And getting pissed off is back. And that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing for sports.
Kepler
fans.
Was part of the ire.
Oh,
yeah, brutal. Anyways, we'll come back. Hour number two, where Zuba Mahente is part of it as well. Miller and Condon till noon. Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO 106.3 FM.